Welcome back. It's Todd Zwillick filling in for John Hockenberry today. Details surrounding the circumstances of the Orlando shooter continue to emerge as investigators work to understand everything they can about this crime. Again, the gunman has been identified as Omar Mateen, a U.S. citizen born in New York. He drew attention from the FBI in the past, and just before carrying out the attack, he called 911 to declare his allegiance to the self-proclaimed Islamic State. Michael German is a former FBI agent. He's now a fellow with the Brennan Center for Justice's Liberty and National Security Program, and he joins me in the studio now. Michael German, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It's not uncommon in these lagging hours after an attack where investigators try to piece together who the assailant was, what motives were, to have these swirls of speculation. From the perspective of law enforcement and what they really need to know about a person, not what the media says they need to know. What do you know now that's important about this individual, and what do you want to know that's important?
Well, I think for an investigator trying to figure out what happened here, and more importantly, whether there are larger threats, is whether this individual had contacts with others, either abroad or particularly with others who were engaged in some kind of violent activity that may have conspired with him to commit this act and perhaps are still at large. And from what we've heard so far, it appears law enforcement doesn't believe that to be the case. And I think that helps law enforcement then just focus on this crime rather than trying to expand their view.
And then at the same time, and now we're going to veer into some of the speculation, sure, which is inevitable, but at the same time, you do have the 911 call. Now, any person can call 911 and say anything before a crime, right, depending on what they want to advertise. It doesn't make him directed by anyone from Islamic State, for sure, but it also implies a franchise form of terror, where if somebody is inspired online or because of what they see on the news about a radical Islamic organization like this, that can also have pretty heavy implications, I would imagine.
So a couple points I'd like to make. The first is that often in cases like this, what we find is these leaks from law enforcement turn out not to be true. There are people who want to participate in the process, who want to present an agenda, whatever, but we have to take everything with a grain of salt and not assume that everything we're hearing today. We might remember after San Bernardino, there was a lot of talk about Facebook posts that turned out not to be true, according to the FBI later. But I think it's also very misunderstood what this means to claim allegiance. If there aren't actual connections, if there isn't actual direction, it's fairly meaningless. When a terrorist group does that kind of, hey, anybody out there do anything bad, that's a sign of weakness. And we shouldn't help them by attributing these acts to those terrorist groups, right? So, you know, if you want to understand how a terrorist group operates, they have two goals. They want to increase public fear to inflate their ability to influence policy, and they want to divide communities along the lines they want them divided. So anything we do in response that helps spread that public fear or amplify that public fear is quite counterproductive, particularly where it also creates mutual mistrust between communities. And unfortunately, the way law enforcement and intelligence agencies have responded to these types of events and talk about these types of events in this period of time when we don't have a lot of facts, I think is more damaging and creates more sensationalized stories, but isn't actually helping us stop the threat.
The political response, both from politicians and from all of the rest of us who have political views, is going to be what it is. And there hasn't been a lot of unity there. But you're saying that law enforcement itself, as it controls the part of the message that it controls in the immediate aftermath, isn't doing a good job of helping to shape the immediate public narrative.
Exactly. Politicians are going to be politicians, and they're going to exploit whatever facts for their own purposes. But the media also is going to respond to things that gain viewers and sell newspapers. But who can control this is law enforcement and intelligence. So when you have the director of the FBI going out repeatedly saying ISIS is the number one threat to the United States, when you have the director of national intelligence going on repeatedly saying the threat today is greater than ever before. I grew up during the Cold War when the Soviet Union had hundreds of anti or ballistic missiles pointed at the United States. You know, this idea that the threat we face today is greater than before empirically is not true. There were far more terrorist attacks in the United States and far more fatalities from terrorism during the 1970s than there have been over the last 10 years. And then it was treated as a law enforcement matter. The numbers were brought down through law enforcement, traditional law enforcement techniques. So the idea that we have to treat this like a national security threat, I don't think is borne out by the evidence.
And another political issue that's clear is this individual, Omar Mateen, was on watch list. He was able to legally buy a gun. This is, of course, a political issue. From the perspective of law enforcement, on a practical level, how important is this, that this part of the management of watch list has not been settled, that this guy bought an AR-15 when the FBI was worried about him?
So the watch lists have been a huge problem, and the way that the FBI does investigations has been a huge problem. We open the aperture. We've given them much more authority to investigate much more deeply than before, based on much less evidence. So the problem is it creates many false alarms. So, In the United States, about 3,000 people are killed each year by structure fires. And we do what we can, right? We have building codes, we have fire codes, we have fire alarms. And it's actually against the law to pull a fire alarm when there isn't a fire, because we know that dulls the response. But in counterterrorism, we're constantly see something, say something. You know, all these reports, and it makes it hard for law enforcement to get rid of that suspicion, right? If you're suspicious for the wrong reasons, it's hard to clear that suspicion and move on to real evidence.
And then at the same time, as difficult as it is to process somebody who's on a watch list being able to buy a deadly weapon, if you expand that list and investigate more people, all of those people have Second Amendment rights, and then you run into a difficult place in deciding who to take action on if they're just being investigated. Michael German, former FBI agent, now a fellow with the Brennan Center for Justice's Liberty and National Security Program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.